Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone and maybe you're in bed because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you'd get at the store. Like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So, download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
How's the itchy?
I don't want to talk about it. Is it going to rain all day tomorrow, Dan? I'm watching our friend Neville Miller over on KMBC 9 News, and I see raindrops, lots of them.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a wet, rainy spring day.
Okay.
Perfect to stay inside and apply all your medications.
So, thank you, Dan. Some of our friends got not funny. Some of our friends got stomped on last night. I think it was Springfield. Did you see the hail? We didn't get it here, but my goodness.
And they've got some flooding in eastern Missouri, south of St. Louis, Potosi, that area. They've got some flooding and some tornadic weather
not
that
here.
Came through.
We will be weather aware.
By the way,
no.
Can we kill that term?
Yes.
What?
Here at the forecast, you need to be weather aware tonight. It's going to be partly cloudy, but later on after midnight, that's when you're going to need to be weather aware.
I like weather aware.
Oh, my God. It is so lame. If anything, I'm a media critic. and I love our meteorology friends. Please do two things. Stop telling me to be weather aware. Just give me the forecast. And number two, stop, and they do this primarily on the weekends. And I don't know if they're trying to fill time, they're running out of things to say. I'm not really sure. But here's what I'll hear on a Sunday morning. So if you're heading off to church later on this morning, or you're going on a walk, or maybe you're heading to the dog park, or maybe going kayaking on Shawnee Mission Lake, you're going to want to be aware of the weather. I mean, why do you need to rhyme off like four or five things that I may or may not do?
No. Wait, Dan, would it not be funny just once? Because you know me, my brain works like an SNL skit in writing. All I want just once is for them to rattle off a series of things one might be doing that are completely inappropriate.
No.
Stop saying maybe you're heading out to the dog park. Just once say, I mean, maybe you're going to the Shady Lady. I would take a light jacket when you're inside, but then when you're outside, that jacket can come off.
Maybe you're on the back patio with your significant other and you look at each other and you have a longing in your eyes and you start to feel like it might be time to get it on outside.
Kind of like in the 10 o'clock news.
Good
weather.
We always
wondered what people were doing when they watched us.
Take your pants off. I mean, as long as you have a privacy fence.
Right. I mean, give me examples of things that I might actually do. I don't have a dog, so I'm not going to the dog park. I rarely go to church, although I should go more often.
It'd be like walking outside your house and go, wow, it's chilly. I wish they had told me to put on a jacket.
Well, but when I do like it, listen, if they're specifically saying for your Easter Sunday family activities, this is the weather. And then, like, on a Wednesday or Thursday, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Easter on Sunday. Okay, good. It's going to be sunny.
Yeah, but then start getting into real life stuff. And when you get home and the kids go down for a little nap, and you're starting to think a little brown chicken, brown cow.
Little patio time. I don't have time.
I mean, talk to me like we're real people. Like,
okay, but then there's also an endless number of, you know, if you got to make that run to the bank, Yeah, mortgage ain't going to pay itself.
Right.
Scott Parks, get that checkbook out. I would definitely wear open-toed shoes. You already do every day.
You know this is a way to connect with the viewer.
I get it. And they've paid some consultant $100,000 to come in there and say, you know, you might want to talk about maybe going to the dog park or church or synagogue.
All you pickleballers out there, it's going to be very windy.
You're heading to Chicken and Pickle and you've got an outdoor court. You might want to make way for an indoor court today. It's going to be a little rainy. Give me a break.
You are a grumpy first time old man.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. And you know why I say that? I had a meeting with my psychologist this morning for about an hour.
Okay.
You cannot kick that.
Keep coming back.
He did. No. So anyway, I met with him. And
I need a new boat.
Having come back from Cancun, I don't know what happened down there. I am in the greatest mood. I mean, you could not kick the happy out of me right now.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I am so content. I am so happy. And yes, we get done talking for like 50 minutes and it's all, you know, sunshine and rainbows and everything. And he looks at me and he goes, you know, it's not always going to be like this. And I go, I'm aware. I got to keep coming back. I get it. You want my money. But I will say this. I had another message down in Cancun, Dana.
Like, do more? Wasn't your first message,
no,
do more?
No, that's not what it was.
You mean when the clouds parted, the sun shone through?
No,
and
Dan,
you know what? You can make fun of me all you want.
I am not making fun of him.
No, it's one of those types?
Because when he came back the first time.
It was Dominican Republic.
It was the Dominican Republic, and he said, I felt the words, and if I got it wrong, I apologize, but it was essentially, you need to be doing more.
The words, and I believe they were from God, were, you're not doing enough.
Okay.
Those were the words I heard. And you don't hear them like,
but you felt
you're
that.
Not doing enough. God doesn't talk like that. He talks through you, not to you.
Okay.
And when I was in the Dominican Republic, I heard, you're not doing enough. And I didn't know what he was talking about. I now know.
Okay.
He was talking about my addiction and working toward my recovery and getting better and being more committed to it and getting more involved in the program, et cetera, et cetera. I was on the beach. You guys can make fun of me all you want.
I'm not making fun of you. I know how important this is to you.
I'm on the beach last Wednesday. I haven't told anybody this except my psychologist. And I'm sitting there on the beach, and I didn't hear it. I felt it. And I'm looking at the ocean because it makes me feel small. You know how the ocean makes me feel.
I know it.
And I'm looking out there, and I'm praying, and I'm just thinking about like other things other than you guys, no offense. And I'm just thinking about bigger things in life and what I need to do and what I need to do to be better. And all I felt, I didn't hear it, but I felt the word forgive. Good. And I'm like, whoa. And I'm like, what was that? And I just hear forgive.
So you know, Scott, that I'm not a church person. I am the antithesis of that thing. Yeah. But I do believe there is a stronger something, a more important something out there. And the ocean is one of the places you can find that. I think the mountains are another place. Like, there are certain places around Earth. You know, it can be different for everybody.
It's not going to be in downtown Kansas City.
It could be, but I'm telling you, the ocean, I believe we are somehow, I don't even know, Dan, I was trying to explain this to Scott. I think somehow there is something inside of us that when you plop down, it's the noise. It's the rhythmic vibration of the water coming in and out.
It's just the power of nature itself.
It's the power. My father has always said the exact same thing. He wants to be by the ocean, to see it, but to hear it.
Mother ocean.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I've thought about that over the last 4 or 5 days, about the people in my life, and maybe it's me too. Maybe I need to forgive myself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for the things that I've done.
Now, since you were in Mexico, did you feel or hear this word in Spanish?
Okay, that's kind of funny.
It was
kind
of funny. I think I broke the orange highlighter.
The word would be perdonar.
Perdonar. That's what I heard. I heard
perdonar.
And I said, God, I'm sorry, God, I don't speak Spanish.
Si, señor. Translation, please.
Why do you do that?
You just peed on his good story, but you pee on my good stories all the time.
You take a beautiful story.
Yes, and you pee on it.
Where God tells me to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
Something that is intrinsically hard for human beings to do.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And so I spend the last 4 days trying to figure out who in my life, including myself, do I need to forgive? And then all you've got is, did he say it to you in Spanish? Pedro Noir.
Well, it's not me. I do not wish to forgive you because I am not upset in any way. So you can cross me off your list.
I don't need to forgive you.
Good.
You weren't even.
We're square.
There was.
We're even Steven.
So I actually didn't put pen to paper, but in my mind I did.
Uh-huh.
And there were a handful of people that I have held grudges against. And I'm not one to normally hold a grudge.
Yeah.
And which is to say I need to forgive them.
Okay.
And forgive and forget.
You need to perdonar them. I agree.
I'm working on perdonaring.
I'm just telling you, I don't need to be perdonarded.
I wasn't going to perdonar you.
Good. I don't want to be on nobody's perdonar
list.
Well,
you're not.
Good.
If I made my list of perdonaring, you're not on
it. I'm glad. I don't want to be on it.
Dan, you're on it. Now.
You weren't. You are a recent addition, as in 4:13 p.m.
Yeah, you weren't until you said, did God speak to you like in the Spanish or something?
When in Mexico.
You are right. The first person that would have dropped that joke. That's why it's so
funny. It's very funny. It was very good.
Thanks.
Anyway, 913-586-7798. Quick break here on Dana and Parks. The Savannah Bananas have done it again. The wildly popular traveling baseball show took Clemson, South Carolina by storm over the weekend, selling out Death Valley.
Yeah.
Which means they sold more than 81,000 tickets. As they played again, the Party Animals.
One of my biggest regrets in the world of Dana goes and sees fun things and does fun things is that I had the opportunity to go see them when they were in Kansas City like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Sort of like they were really popular, I think regionally maybe, or people like down south knew who they were. Someone said to me, will you come into our suite and watch the Savannah Bananas are in town? And I just had other stuff going on. Not super like critical stuff, but I had other stuff. Yeah. And I was like, you know, I might have to take a pass on this one. I had no idea how funny this was, how entertaining they are. If you guys have not seen the video of these baseball players doing the full rendition of Now I've Had the Time of My Life from Dirty Dancing, including the lift on the baseball field, it is the funniest thing you've ever seen. They literally do the entire Dirty Dancing dance at the end.
I believe it's on Netflix. There's a series on Netflix, and I can't remember the name of it.
Leslie Stahl just interviewed them on 60 Minutes.
Yeah, they're huge.
I was like, oh, I got something else going on tonight. I'm like, why did I not go to that?
Yes, and so when I was in the clink, we watched the series on the Savannah Bananas, and so when they do the tryouts, based on your personality, they determine whether you're a party animal or a banana.
Yeah.
And so some guys end up on the party. I mean, it's the same crew, right?
Yeah.
They all travel together. It's kind of like the Harlem Globetrotters would always play the Generals.
Yep.
And it was the same team that they would play every night. And they all worked out their skits together. And it's just fun. And the guy who bought the team, and he's part of the act, he bought them for just pennies on the dollar. It was just a minor league baseball team in Savannah, Georgia. And he decided there's got to be more to baseball than just going around the Southeast.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, we won 7-5 tonight. Oh, we lost 5-1 tonight.
Because Major League Baseball has that market cornered, right?
Right. And when you go watch a minor league baseball team, no offense to the Kansas City Monarchs, you're getting real baseball, but it's just not the same quality that you would get if you were out at Kauffman Stadium. You're getting a minor league team.
Sure.
And that's what it is. So the guy who bought the Savannah Bananas, which, by the way, is the greatest name of a team I've ever heard, decided we're going to change the way baseball is done. And they've got different rules. I can't remember the rules.
Well, clearly when they're busting out doing the Dirty Dancing moves, they have different rules.
Right, but I know, but there's like a strike ball rule, a pop-up. Like, I think if you pop up three times, you're out.
It's also very fan
heavily horribly fan-oriented.
Fan-oriented.
Mm-hmm. Everything is about the fans.
Yeah.
And they know that, and they're smart, because they know who buys the tickets. And it's obviously the fans.
It's become a hot ticket now. It is a hot ticket.
They sold out the Clemson Death Valley Stadium.
1,000 people. That's crazy.
81,000 people went to go watch a exhibition parody baseball game.
Yeah.
They also sold out the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Stadium the week before.
God, that's crazy.
65,000 people. Mm-hmm. They're awesome. There is a series on them. I can't remember if it's on Netflix or what it's on.
Oh, I'll go watch it.
A former Disney employee who hacked into the company's servers has been sentenced to 3 years in prison, according to authorities.
That's a no-no.
Michael Schur was fired from Disney last June for misconduct. Schur's job in Florida was to create and publish the menus for Disney's restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
According to officials, Schur hacked into Disney's menu creation servers multiple times and manipulated the menus.
Wow.
Some of the changes included the change to prices. He also added some flowery language to the menus at Disney. Here's the part, though. I know. That part is funny.
Oh, come on. It's funny.
Here's the part I don't like.
Okay.
And this is where he's in big trouble. He also reportedly altered the allergen information.
Oh, yeah. No, you can't do that. That could kill somebody.
On the menus to indicate that some items were safe for customers with certain allergies when they clearly were not.
Huh.
He also altered information on the menus related to wine regions to reflect locations of recent mass shootings.
Oh, good God.
There is a pro curling league that has just started up.
Here?
No, worldwide. It is worldwide. You know,
global.
There's a curling, because we've been invited.
Yeah.
To go out and learn how to curl. And I believe it's in either Blue Springs or Independence or somewhere out east. And they've invited us to come out and learn how to curl.
Mm-hmm. You should do that.
It's called the Grand Slam of Curling. It is a six-week circuit. It includes stops in Canada, the United States, and Europe. There are six teams of five men and five women each. Quoting here from Jennifer Jones, who is an advisor, former Olympic gold medalist. And I am quoting from her.
It's a big deal, Scott.
Keep in mind, she is a curler.
Yes.
And she says, as an athlete.
They are athletes. Don't you make fun of that. Have you seen the sweepy, sweepy, sweepy guy? You've got to be very precise. You've got to not fall on your bum when you're walking around on ice. You got to sweepy, sweepy, sweepy.
As an athlete, I could have only dreamed about being able to participate in the professional curling league. Now having the opportunity to help make that dream a reality for the next generation of curlers is a true honor. And it's what inspires us every day as we work to build this league. One team is from Japan, a couple teams from Canada, a couple teams from the United States, a couple teams from Europe.
God.
Okay. And then this cat. A Grain Valley man, we may bring this up in the late 5 o'clock hour.
We will be bringing this back.
A Grain Valley man could spend up to 3 decades in prison if he is found guilty of stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars.
From his mother. Jinx Uomiko.
She's elderly, by the way. On April 29th, that is today, the Jackson County Prosecutor's Office announced charges against Michael McLinn. He faces one felony count of financial exploitation of the elderly and one count of felony stealing. Court documents state that McLinn and his girlfriend moved into his old mom's home in 2021 or 2022 to help his sick father until his death. In 2022, the documents allege, McLinn began withdrawing money from the 80-year-old's bank account without her knowledge or her permission. He is accused of stealing roughly $217,000.
I bet he wiped her out.
From his mom's checking account. Also believed to rack up $10,000 on her credit card and $13,000 from her money market account.
All right. When we get back, we have new details on the upcoming services for slain firefighter Graham Hoffman. There are a lot of questions about the case, where we go from here. And specifically, Scott, a lot of our listeners yesterday were asking, why was the accused woman in this case ever out on the street, literally on the side of the road, after she is alleged to have assaulted a police officer a couple of days before the murder. We are going to get answers to all of those questions straight ahead on Dana and Parks. And we'll also update you on the public memorial and the procession coming up later in the week.
Before we go to break, and we do have the Clay County prosecutor standing by, we'll get with him in just a moment. You've probably never heard of it. It's called the Cascadia Subduction Zone Fault. It runs from Northern California to the just near Vancouver in Canada. And experts are saying within the next 50 years, it is expected to create an earthquake, roughly a 9.0 earthquake, which happens about once every 450 years. Last time it occurred was in 1700. If it does occur, as they suspect it might within the next 50 years, it could create a tsunami that would be more than 160 feet tall, and the shake from the quake is expected to last more than 5 minutes. They've run the numbers on it. If this earthquake does occur, as predicted, it would lead to 14,000 fatalities. It would be the worst natural disaster in U.S. recorded history. 14,000 fatalities, 100,000 injuries, and the collapse of 620,000 buildings in the Pacific Northwest, including 100 hospitals and 2,000 schools. Okay, good times. Something to look forward to. Quick break. When we get back, we will visit with the Clay County prosecutor here on Dana and Parks. Story here from Channel 9. In the wake of the deadly stabbing of Kansas City paramedic Graham Hoffman, national safety experts are renewing calls for standardized self-defense training across the fire service, despite mourning the loss of one of their own. Kansas City Fire Department crews returned to work on Monday, continuing to serve the community. Charged in connection with his death is Shanetta Bossel, age 38. She faces a count of murder and is being held on $1 million bond.
First-degree murder, armed criminal action, assault, and resisting arrest.
Now, she was arrested shortly before this incident on Sunday morning for biting a police officer in Platte City and had been released, according to reports that we've seen, on $10,000 bond. Some people are questioning that. How is that even possible? Her bond currently now is $1 million. And joining us on the KMBZ hotline is Clay County Prosecutor Zach Thompson. Mr. Thompson, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Zach, it's a fair question, and people are angry and mourning this loss of this amazing young man. And again, it's a fair question. Why was she ever out after allegedly biting the first police officer?
Well, we were contacted by law enforcement Wednesday of last week in regard to what's called a 24-hour hold. That's when someone is alleged to have committed an offense, and we have 24 hours to make a filing decision.
Sure.
In that case, we filed those charges, right? We filed the D felony and the E felony resisting because we recognized the significance of that case, the danger the defendant posed to the community. And so we filed that paperwork while the defendant was still in custody after the initial arrest on the Wednesday case, and requested a warrant be issued so that the defendant remained in custody. Part of that process is the judge setting a bond. And in America, according to the Eighth Amendment and the Missouri Constitution as well, the defendants have a right to a bond. So what happened was the judge set the bond at $10,000 on that initial case. The defendant posted that bond. And then subsequent to that is the incident involving the death of the firefighter.
What I think, though, Zach, that a lot of people confuse is there is when somebody gets a $10,000 bond or $1 million bond, as she currently faces now on the murder charge, that doesn't necessarily mean somebody has to walk in with $1 million in cash or $10,000 in cash necessarily, right?
It depends on how the judge structures the bond order. Right. And I think it's important to remember during this conversation the different roles everyone has in the criminal justice system. Police investigate crimes. They provide us with information. We review that information in light of the law, make a filing decision, and then if we believe charges are warranted, we contact the judge and request a warrant. That's what we did in the previous case. To get back to your question about whether or not you actually have to come up with the full amount, that depends. There's something called 10% to the court, where if the bond's at $100,000, you and 10% is approved, you can pay $10,000 to the court. There's also what's called a surety, a bondsman, right, where you pay a bondsman to put up that bond.
Yeah. Hey, Zach, I think this is a fair way to ask this question on behalf of our listeners, that she, I have read, did not have any priors in Missouri, certainly any serious felony priors. And so let me ask it this way. In a case like this, but before the murder of this beloved firefighter, would a $10,000 bond for biting a police officer or anyone be what is considered standard in a case like that? Take the murder out of it that happened, you know, just for the sake of this discussion. Is that generally appropriate in a case like that?
Well, so the Supreme Court rule that the judge operates under, that we operate under, lists a whole series of factors that the judge and the court is to take into consideration when the court makes its decision about what the appropriate bond is, right? One of those things, like you mentioned, is a criminal history. Other issues that the judge is supposed to consider in all criminal cases is, ties to the community, the nature and circumstances of the offense, financial resource, and a whole host of other factors. The truth is, no two cases are alike. I can tell you, in this case, the whole reason we requested a warrant was we believe the defendant posed a danger to the community. In fact, the way the rules work right now, they were modified in 2020. There's only two ways, essentially, to get a warrant issued in the first place. There's two factors, one of which, or both, have to be present before a court is even free to issue a warrant. And the first factor is the threat the defendant poses to the community. And the second is whether or not the defendant poses a flight risk. In the case that we're talking about, that initially had the $10,000 bond, which is now $250,000.
Any provision, Zach, at all for a heightened punishment or different route to go as a prosecutor because he was a public safety official? Or is that just for police officers who are killed in the line of duty?
If this were an assault, there are aggravators that can make assaults on, you know, emergency personnel and certain other protected folks a more serious offense. The defendant currently is charged with murder in the first degree. The range of punishment on that is life imprisonment without the possibility of parole or the death penalty.
Okay.
It doesn't get any more serious than that.
Could this be a death penalty case?
The investigation's ongoing on this one.
But Zach, that's yes or no. The public wants that, and so we have to ask.
Yeah, it's a fair question. Here's the answer, is in any case where that's within the possible range of punishment, this is the process. We review all the facts of the case. We have discussions with victim family members, because ultimately, you know, it's my responsibility as the prosecutor to make recommendations as to sentence. However, I can tell you, when I'm making up my decision on that, there's nothing more important to me than the feelings and opinions and beliefs of those most affected by the crime. In this case, you know, Graham's family.
So when you're weighing whether or not to, in the end, and I don't know what the timeline would be, and maybe you could help us with that. Maybe there isn't a timeline. I don't know. But when you're factoring in, do I seek life in prison without parole, or do I seek the death penalty in this case? And I don't want to make light or lighten how serious of a decision that would have to be for you. You're saying then that Graham Hoffman's family would have some input in that decision?
No decision like that would be made before having a conversation with the people that knew Graham the best, right, and that are most affected by the crime. That's true in this case. That's true in any kind of case where we have a victim. We want to get their opinion on what justice looks like for them, because our goal in the Clay County Prosecutor's Office is to fight for justice for victims of crime. and that can look different to different people.
Next up is preliminary hearing, I believe, in June. Anything we need to know before that, Zach?
Just that the case is ongoing, right? I mean, what's publicly available is about as much as I'd feel comfortable talking about. My goal in this case is to get justice inside the courtroom for Graham and his family. And I don't want to say anything or do anything that would jeopardize that process.
Absolutely.
We understand that. We certainly understand that. Clay County Prosecutor Zach Thompson, do appreciate your time, your candor today, and thank you for it.
Thank you.
All right. Be well, my friend.
Couple of notes just to add here. You know, we were curious yesterday. There hasn't been a lot of reporting on this. When she bit, like chomped down seriously and injured the first police officer, she bit two. We'll get to the second one in a minute. When she bit the first police officer that led to the $10,000 bond, we were wondering yesterday, you guys, did she know it was an officer? Because it made it sound like she was trying to break into his car, his personal car, is what it said.
Okay.
And then he came out and was like, hey, what's going on? And she turned and is alleged to have bitten down on his arm. And I do believe he had to go to the hospital for those injuries. Okay. I wanted to know, did she know at the time it was a cop? Because this was his personal car, I thought maybe he was home, maybe he was out working in the garage. Like, not that it's okay to go around biting people that aren't in uniform, but did she know he was a cop? And the answer I just got a moment ago on that was yes. He had just returned home from work. He was in uniform.
Okay, so she knew it was a cop.
She knew it was a cop. And then that starts to make sense that Zach and his office at the Clay County Prosecutor's Office said, we do believe she's a danger to society. We want a warrant, which kept her in jail. Judge decides $10,000 bond. And then somehow she gets somebody to post that bond. She's out. And within 48 hours, we have lost Graham.
This is starting to make sense to me now. Because as we were doing the interview, I kept thinking to myself, the officer who was bit was a Platte City police officer. That doesn't necessarily mean he lived in Platte County.
Correct.
He lived in Clay County, worked in Platte City.
It's probably the case.
Otherwise, it wouldn't have been in Zach Thompson's office.
All of the cases, because I asked this as well today, all of the cases fall under Clay.
Okay.
Every single one of these cases.
So the cop had to have lived in Clay County somewhere.
The biting and the murder and the subsequent biting of the second officer as she tried—
And the attempted stealing of the ambulance.
Jack the ambulance— All of it falls under Clay County.
Well, you know, and he, you know, he was very careful. He was very good, but very careful not to say things that would jeopardize the case. And he mentioned that at the tail end. But I found it fascinating that he did mention she is charged. And I'm paraphrasing here, but close enough to be dangerous. She is charged with first degree murder, which carries a penalty of life in prison without parole. And there was a pregnant pause, and he said, or the death penalty. Which was going to be our next question anyway.
A T-shirt fundraiser put on by the Kansas City Fire Department has raised nearly $90,000 for Hoffman's family in 24 hours. We will post the link.
I love how this town comes together behind tragedy.
If you would like to help, all proceeds go directly to his family. And they say, Kansas City... Pumper 42. Under that, it says Medic Southside.
913-586-7798. 913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. Story here from ABC News. A funeral home director has been charged after allegedly throwing out the bodies of thousands of pets and giving owners the ashes of other animals.
What?
Collectively charging them more than $650,000 in the process, according to prosecutors. Pennsylvania's Attorney General Dave Sunday announcing today that Jacob Verab, owner of Verab Funeral Home and Eternity Pet Memorial in Pittsburgh, has been charged with improper disposal of thousands of dogs and cats, for which owners paid for cremations, burials, returns of ashes, and other services, stealing more than $650,000 from customers between 2021 and 2024.
So you ask, how do you really know the ashes are the cremains of your pet? And the answer is you don't. You just hope that the folks in charge of that system do the right thing.
Or honest, yes.
Very few people are going to DNA test ashes, even if that's a thing, and I'm not sure that it is.
By the way, the funeral home also worked with human remains.
Here we go. Look, while you were gone, Scott, there were two, if not three, stories in the stack about awful, awful cases locally where, in one case, a family went in Kansas City to look for their deceased, I think, aunt or mother, looked in the window, and the remains were just laying there for all to see.
Body?
Yes, looking through the window for 3 weeks. And I sort of waited to talk about this for you to come back. How do you know that a funeral home is either reputable or not reputable? Because in the case of the local funeral home that is now accused of having improperly stored remains, they had like five prior violations. You know, there's been an emergency order now to shut them down. But, you know, when you're in the throes of grief, who asks you what funeral home do you want? That's not like you got a tow truck guy on speed dial. When someone comes to you in an immediate moment of grief and says, where do you want us to take your loved one? How do you know? I don't know.
You wouldn't know where to go?
No.
Would you not just Google it and pick a name that you recognize?
Aha. Uh-huh. You Google it, and sometimes that algorithm shoves up some company that might look like they have 4.5 stars online. But like, how do you know? You don't.
Let me ask you a question.
Wouldn't you ask, like, I'm asking, do most people ask someone, who did you use when your mother passed? And then right. That's kind of how you...
I guess.
Most people are not going to have a personal relationship with that person the way you would with, you know,
your doctor.
Doctor or your, I don't know.
But let me ask you something. And maybe this is just a concern of the living. But for example, I've been very clear. I think you have too. When I pass, I want to be cremated. I don't want worms and grubs getting in my casket and eating my body. And I don't want to just decompose. To me, that's gross. So I want to be cremated. Let's say that I end up at a ne'er-do-well funeral home. And they hand an urn, it'll be a kiss urn, of course.
Of course.
To my children. And the ashes inside are really from his campfire at his property last Saturday. What do I care? I'm gone.
You don't care. But if I paid $600 to have Fluffy in my nightstand next to me, I would prefer that it be Fluffy in there and not Baxter.
But that's my point. I mean, like when Stella died last July, okay? They asked me, we're going to take her in the car. Do you want her cremated remains returned? If you say no, they take all the animals and they put them in this like memorial park area. So they cremate the dog and then they spread her ashes in this memorial park and they gave him the address and they said, if you ever want to come up and visit her, Stella doesn't live there.
Right.
She's gone.
She's in your memory. She's in your heart.
She's in my heart. That's right.
But, I understand what you're saying, Scott. This is fraud. It is still fraud.
You're right.
If I'm paying $300 for product A.
I know. I get it. I want product A.
How do I know product B isn't a horrible dog that like bit three people? I don't want that on my mantle.
And then if it comes back to life.
Well, there's that.
It bites you.
I'm telling you, I'm starting to think you need a doctor, you need a tow truck driver, and now you need a funeral person.
On speed dial?
It's a grim thing to have in your Rolodex, though, isn't it?
By the way, I did tell Sarah the other day when we were driving to Lawrence, we drove by, it's on K7, and I said, I want to be buried, I want my cremated remains put there. The place is called Newcomers.
Well, you all are. I thought you were going to say K10.
I swear to God.
Damn, that highway is so dangerous, you might not. You just skip the middleman.
It's Newcomers Cemetery.
Yeah.
On K10. Yeah. Or K7. And I told Sarah that's where I want to. Mm-hmm. What is he saying?
Man, who knows? A better man.
It's quick Pearl
break,
Jam.
Quick break. Dan's got the news coming up in 2 minutes. exceptional painting.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at kmbz.com.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.